Marvelites, you're listening to This Week in Marvel, episode number 424. I'm Ryan Penagos, a.k.a. Agent M.
And I'm human woman Lorraine Sink.
You sure are.
That's me.
Yeah. Hello. This Week in Marvel, we talk about all the Marvel things. It's like my goal every week is like, how quickly can I make Lorraine put her head in her hands and wipe the sadness away from her face?
It was just something about the way you were like, hello, my friends. Are you out there?
So This Week in Marvel, if you're just joining us, we're going to talk about all kinds of fun stuff that's happening this week, whether it's new comic books, it's news about movies, TV shows, video games, new releases, all kinds of fun stuff. And we've been celebrating Marvel's 80th anniversary all year long, and we're so close to the end. It's wild.
Oh, and we're kicking off Star Wars Week!
Da-na-na-na-na-na!
Yeah, it's the 90s X-Men theme song,
right?
For Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm
just
unfamiliar.
Like John Williams intended.
Yep.
But we're going to be doing Star Wars Week here at This Week in Marvel, and we are talking about how and why Marvel publishes Star Wars comics. We're going to have artist Will Sliney on to talk about Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland Parks and the rise of Kylo Ren. Squeal.
Is that his, like, the sound of it? Squeal. It'd be great if every time he came on screen, he was like, squeal.
Squeal is the sound that I think electric guitars make. Squeal.
All right. We are going to talk about Star Wars and so many other things, but I want to get into some stuff that might be things we're hyped about this week, comma, including news.
Colon.
That's right. So CCXP was last weekend, and CCXP, if you don't know, is a huge Comic-Con in Brazil. I was a guest there a few years back. It's really cool. I mean, it's massive. There was a new poster release for Marvel Studios' Black Widow, and footage from Marvel Studios' Eternals was revealed to the crowd, wowing everybody in attendance.
But also in Black Widow-related news, Hasbro unveiled a new wave of Marvel Legends figures, including movie-inspired figures for Black Widow, Red Guardian, Taskmaster, Yelena Belova, as well as comic-inspired Crossbones, Spymaster, and Winter Soldier, along with a build-a-figure of wham, 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 Crimson Dynamo.
Yeah, we have full pictures on Marvel.com for all of these. Another thing that we're hyped about this week is celebrating Marvel's Stan Lee. True believers, get ready for this.
Stars of the Marvel Universe assemble to celebrate the life and legacy of Stan Lee in an ABC News production, celebrating Marvel's Stan Lee at a 60-minute television special hosted by Clark Gregg.
Hear from Tom Hiddleston, Paul Bettany, Kobe Smulders, Ming-Na Wen, Mark Hamill, Kevin Smith, Todd McFarlane, and many more who share their memories of Stan.
Viewers will go on a journey following Stan's life, his impact on the world of pop culture, and watch never-before-seen footage from deep within the Marvel and ABC News archives.
This brand new special airs Friday, December 20th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, only on ABC. All right. So one thing that we talked about last week was, hey, if you're a comic shop or you work at a comic shop and you play our shows in your store, let us know. We want to shout you out on the podcast. And we got a tweet from French Stick Cosplay at French Stick One, who said, hey, the guys at Newsstand Comics in the UK play This Week in Marvel and Marvel's pull list on the shop's YouTube playlist,
Aww. Which
is awesome. Thank you for doing that.
New comics announcement time. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Come and get it.
Ooh, so we've got, what was your guitar sound?
Squee-oo.
And then new comics announcements was?
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
Please, someone, keep track of all these sounds. Anyway, one of the things to talk about is Hellions, which is coming March 2020, written by Zeb Wells with art by Steven Segovia. The series focuses on some of the nasty bad mutants of Krakoa. The interesting thing here is that the Hellions, as a name, the Hellions was originally the team that was like the rival to the New Mutants. They were taught by Emma Frost. They were all pretty much murdered in the early 90s. They all wore different shades of purple jumpsuits as like their team outfit. Is great.
We also have a bunch of new comics coming March 2020 in our special March previews edition of Marvel's Pull List video with Ryan and my nemesis slash best friend, Tucker Marcus. Why don't you tell us, what is The Pull List if you've never listened?
The Pull List is another podcast that we do. Tucker and I talk about all the new comics that come out every month. And we do video versions where we sort of highlight just a couple of books. And every month, we do a special edition of the show we put up on YouTube and all of our social channels that lets us announce a whole bunch of new books.
All right, let's talk about some of these new comics that you guys got to talk about, because I'm really pumped for this. Outlawed number 1, written by Eve L. Ewing and art by Kim Jacinto. I'm really excited because I just love Eve Ewing. I think she's incredible and like a badass. But this series is coming out of Incoming. But what is Incoming?
Incoming is the big book that releases next week. It is a huge book that's sort of going to lead us into 2020 with a lot of stories, a lot of characters. If you're going to read one book at the end of the year to like get you ready for 2020, it's going to be Incoming, because then you're going to get a sample of so many cool stories coming ahead. We have Marvel's Avengers Captain America number one and Marvel's Avengers Black Widow number one, two issues that are tying into Marvel's Avengers video game, which is coming May 2020. It's pretty cool. We're going to have Captain America number one, written by Paul Allure with art by George Ginty. This one's cool. It's another prequel. We've already released the Iron Man one, which is neat. And then in the Black Widow issue, which is written by Christos Gage and art by Michele Bandini, it has Natasha Romanoff being a part of S.H.I.E.L.D. and figuring out where her relationships lie. It also has a little bit of that Taskmaster. Goodness.
Taskmaster. What a jerk. What a fun guy. What great boots.
Yeah.
Next up, Immortal Hulk number 33. But it's not just a 33. No, no. It's a 750 issue for The Incredible Hulk. That's by the incredible Al Ewing with art by Joe Bennett. If you guys aren't reading this series, it's crazy bananas. So good. It really harkens back to the Hulk's greater history. It's gruesome. It's messed up. It deals with all of Bruce's demons, sometimes in very literal ways. Yeah. And 750 is going to be something special. So get with it.
It's dark. It's weird. It has beautiful art. And it is surprising on every page. That is the preview episode on this week's episode of Marvel's Pull List, the podcast version. We talk about our favorite books, which include Annihilation Scourge, Silver Surfer number one, Star Wars, Dr. Aphra number 40, New Mutants number 3, and X-Force number 3. But you can get Marvel's Pull List wherever you get your podcast. That includes Pandora, and you can watch the video versions on Marvel.com and YouTube and everywhere else. All right, so those are the new comics for this week, but we have so much more to talk about because we've got This Week in Marvel History. So all year long, we've been talking about all the fun stuff that has happened across 80 plus years, whether they be new releases, characters, theatrical events, or stuff in our history. This week, we are talking about December 13th through the 19th, and we're going to go way back to 1954, December 16th, with Dellavision number one, which was released on this date. Della, aka the quote-unquote television queen, isn't particularly well known, and the series actually becomes Patty Powers with issue number 4. But I put this on here because it helps illustrate the breadth of Atlas's line of titles at the time, where we would have something called Dellavision, the television queen, and you know, we'd have, you know, our Patty books, and we'd have all kinds of fun stuff. December 14th, 1971, the Beast, aka Dr. Hank McCoy, shows his furry form for the first time in Amazing Adventures number 11 by Jerry Conway and Tom Sutton. He gets roped into some scientific shenanigans and ends up experimenting on himself, because that's what he does. He transforms into the gray-furred version of himself. It is actually a very creepy, tragic story. The art in here is really like gnarly horror.
When will superheroes stop experimenting on themselves and making things worse for themselves?
Never! We need them to do this for the stories.
December 13th, 1988. It is Christmas Eve in The Amazing Spider-Man number 314 by David Michelinie and Todd McFarlane. And Peter and MJ are evicted from their home.
Yeah.
And there's a nice ending, but what a sad Christmas.
Yeah.
I love Marvel's Christmas stories because it's always like no one can be happy. So like somebody's going to ruin Christmas. But then it like ends up being fun.
Yeah.
December 17th, 1997, a very fine year. Avengers relaunches after the Heroes Reborn story as part of Heroes Return with Avengers number one by Kurt Busiek and George Perez. We just had Kurt Busiek on the show.
Yeah.
It's huge and glorious and packed with characters and with Perez just doing what he does best, which is be dope.
Yeah. If you are an Avengers fan, if you like the movies or if you just like, you know, Avengers stories and you've never read this run of Avengers, I think
it's so good.
George Perez does stuff that you're like, wait, a human person drew this? Did it take him 12 years per issue? And no, it didn't. He was just that friggin' good. All right, December 17th, 2008, Victoria Hand debuts in Invincible Iron Man number 8 by Matt Fraction and Salvador LaRocca. She's working with Hammer Commander Norman Osborn here, but had a tenure at S.H.I.E.L.D. and later worked with the Avengers. The best part about Hammer is I believe we came up with Hammer as an acronym, but never revealed what the acronym was.
That is true.
100% true. And so Hammer was Norman Osborn's version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But that's like perfect for Norman Osborn. Yeah. He's like, I don't care. I just want something better than a S.H.I.E.L.D.
100%.
Hammer it is.
Yeah.
December 14th, 2018, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is released in theaters. Reminder, there is a special video episode of This Week in Marvel as part of the video extras for the film on iTunes.
Yeah. And in my opinion, this is the greatest superhero film ever.
Yeah, I remember Ryan lost his dang mind when he saw this movie. I love this movie as well. It's very good.
It's perfect.
Well, that's a movie, but let's talk about a different movie slash a different comic book slash a different universe far, far away.
Are you talking about the Star Wars?
I am.
I love the Star Wars. So the first film came out in 1977, and we actually have been with Star Wars at Marvel since before the beginning. You know, at Marvel, we've always done non-Marvel books. In my history dive this year, I remember seeing us publish in the Timely era, I believe, comics based on radio serials that weren't Marvel properties. You know, stuff that you would have to be like a really intense historian of either radio dramas and serials or Golden Age comic books to know of. But we've been doing this, you know, for entire 80 years of our history almost. And, you know, I think we really ramped it up in the 1970s. 70s, of course, you know, I mentioned Star Wars, but we were doing Godzilla. We had Conan and other Robert E. Howard properties. But I think the most notable is probably Star Wars.
Marvel Comics actually published the first Star Wars series in 1977. Before the film came out, the first two issues came out. Then it ran for six issues. But initially, when Marvel met with George Lucas to hear about Star Wars, we passed on it. But at that point, you didn't know that Star Wars was going to be one of the biggest film franchises that has ever existed.
Right. And well, the funny thing about Star Wars is it's so much more than a space opera. It is, you know, taking things from, you know, Western films, from Japanese films, it's taking a lot of influences and then putting it into the space opera series. And that was part, what I had read was that was a little bit of how Lucas convinced Roy Thomas, editor-in-chief at Marvel, to actually come back around. You know, they had passed on it. He came back around to do it because he shared a lot of the same interests that George Lucas did, a lot of the same influences, and he saw a piece of concept art that was done by Ralph McQuarrie. Ralph McQuarrie, if you don't know, is sort of the guy who conceptualized so much of Star Wars visually. It's freaky cool stuff. If you get like a chance, you Google Ralph McQuarrie Star Wars, they're gorgeous. But from what I understand, that was how Roy was like, he saw it as like, yes, please, we'll take it and I will write it as editor-in-chief. It feels like the best thing that should be done. And so he jumps on to write it. And then you get Howard Chaykin to draw it. And Chaykin can do anything. Howard Chaykin is a legitimate legend at this point now. But back then, he was still just like going, going, going. He was doing some really cool stuff. There is an old Star Wars poster, I think from 1976, that Chaykin drew. And one of the earliest like broad promotional images for the film, which is also, to me, bonkers. So those, as you mentioned, those first six issues are an adaptation of the film. And like, they didn't have all the reference at the time to like get it all accurate and sort of gels together as they go along. But then after that sixth issue, they have to figure out what to do. The series runs for 107 issues going until 1986. And it was a really important series for Marvel, putting a stake in the ground for us in a number of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because one of the main issues with publishing Star Wars comics, especially at the beginning, is like there's a whole sandbox to play in of different kinds of people and places in the galaxies and kinds of stories that you want to explore and tell. But in practice, we couldn't expand on the stories readers really wanted because those were for the movies, especially between the films. You know, you're like, oh, I just watched A New Hope. What happens next? Well, you're going to have to wait to watch the next movie. We can't make up that answer in Marvel Comics because they're making a movie and they want you to see it. People wanted info about, you know, like Han and Luke and Leia. What's going on with their love triangle? Remember when you thought that was a love triangle and that was totally fine? And then Vader and Obi-Wan and more Clone Wars and all of that good stuff. So instead, they settled on exploring Han's adventures when he was a smuggler and an outlaw because he was kind of like off being rogue for a while.
Yeah, and they had like pirates and they had like a lot of ancillary stories.
Oh, don't forget the big rabbit Jackson.
Jackson! He's kind of a badass, too. In the books,
he's
pretty cool. Fans liked him, from what I understand. Lucas wasn't a fan, but you have Jackson as a new character. There are a number of others, including Valance. Baylert Valance is his name. His first name was revealed in, I think, like a role-playing tabletop game years later. They came up with these stories that didn't always connect with what Lucas wanted, but they're going on a monthly schedule. Mm-hmm. They're trying to come up with cool stories and ideas and keep people excited and don't always have the opportunity to go through and like make sure everything works. So some of it's really cool. Some of it just like lived and died on the page.
Well, and then, of course, Empire Strikes Back comes out in 1980, which is, in my opinion, the best Star Wars film.
When that comes out, you have Roy Thomas is no longer editor-in-chief.
Right.
Archie Goodwin is now editor-in-chief. And they try to figure out, okay, how do we do stuff with the main Star Wars characters, but stay away from the storylines that are in the films, especially at this point where like so much changes after Empire. There's a lot of pirates and a lot of action and little things that sort of could give them stories that didn't affect change, but still get mm-hmm. you those adventures and that spirit of stuff.
Also, at this time, Carmine Infantino took over on art. Super big artist from our distinguished competition back in the day.
He's a friggin' legend. If you don't know who Carmine Infantino is, please Google him. He's
done lots of many important arts.
So good. And so the books keep going on. 1983, Return of the Jedi comes out, which I love Ewoks.
Ewoks scared me as a child.
Ooh, Yubnub.
Yubnub dance.
Yeah.
I do like that. Then David Michelinie and Walt Simonson got together for the following books, No More Han, so they embraced Lando Calrissian, and they focused on his sort of inner workings with the Rebel Alliance.
So Star Wars comics, they start to wane a little bit in terms of like the giant popularity. There's no more movies, right? And people think Star Wars is over forever. And so it sort of wanes a little bit. We have the droid book. We have an Ewoks comic. The last couple of years is like figuring out, okay, what do we do now? Because these are sort of after Return of the Jedi. You're telling stories that aren't necessarily reflected in the films. It was really cool because there was a full female-led team working on Star Wars at the end.
Yeah, Joe Duffy was the main writer. Cynthia Martin was the penciler. Glynis Wien was the colorist. And Anne Nesenti was the editor. It's actually interesting because there have not been, in those early days, there were not like a ton of all female creative teams. I think the first one was like in the late 70s for The Cat, which was the precursor to Patsy Walker Hellcat.
Yeah. These issues are great. They're doing some really fun stuff with Leia, with Han, with trying to like do that balancing act of telling stories that are interesting and engaging without breaking the continuity and the canon. But by 1986, it sort of all comes to an end for Marvel and Star Wars comics.
But then there were other series by other publishers. In 1991, Dark Horse published a limited series, Star Wars Dark Empire. The creative team was Tom Veitch and Cam Kennedy, who approached Lucasfilm to ask about producing new Star Wars comics for Marvel.
And it almost happened at Marvel, from what I understand, but it like fell apart. But they still had this great idea. So those guys were like, hey, look over there. Dark Horse is doing Aliens. They're doing Predator. They're doing these licensed books and they're doing them well. So they take Dark Empire over to Dark Horse. If you've never read Dark Empire or Dark Empire 2, I highly suggest it. They're on Marvel Unlimited. They're great books. Really gnarly, really cool.
They went on to produce over 100 Star Wars comics until 2014, very, very recently.
Yeah, Dark Horse did incredible work. They didn't just touch on like a specific time period. They went all the way back to like Knights of the Old Republic, all the way to, you know, future stuff, past Return of the Jedi and beyond, and lots of different possibilities. Some of my favorite, you know, I talk about this on the show. I love a good what if story, a good alternate universe story. They did like Star Wars alternate reality stories as well, and they told some really great stuff. These mostly are now looked at as quote unquote legends continuity, along with the old Marvel comics. All of this stuff not essentially canon to the movie continuity.
Right.
So legends is like, these are great stories, but these aren't what we look at as the real quote unquote history. But some characters, such as Valance, have been brought into canon. Grand Admiral Thrawn, a character who first came up in the novels, that was looked at as legends, but then he's more recently been brought into tellings of the story that are now officially canon. So a lot of the legend stuff influenced things that would then become canon.
Well, and it's interesting because there were so many people that are now working on those films because it's been 40 years that they were reading those comics and playing those games when they were young people.
Yeah.
And now they get to work on that stuff. So it's, you know, it's obviously become some of the DNA,
yeah,
I'm sure, in their minds of what the Star Wars universe is. But the Walt Disney Company acquired Marvel in 2009. Ryan, you were here for that.
I very much remember all those days.
And then also acquired Lucasfilm in 2012. And I was here for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember that. I heard like rumblings of, I think that we're going to get Star Wars comics. I think we're going to get Star Wars comics. And then one day it magically happened.
It took 2 years. I remember the announcement at the end of 2014. We had been hoping for it and things were starting to move in that direction. And then we announced it. So I think it was like January of 2015,
yeah,
the first Star Wars comics come out.
And from this point on, all of the Marvel Comics Star Wars books are in canon. They exist in the same continuity.
Yeah, our Marvel team works with the Lucasfilm story group hand in hand. They work very closely together to make sure our stories fit in with the continuity. They fit character. They fit all the different things that you need to tell the right Star Wars story because they're so close to this.
I really love this first series that we kicked everything off with, which took place in between A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back. I think that was really cool to add to the canon between those films in a new way, and it was written by Jason Aaron with art by John Cassaday.
Because this was in canon, because it was Marvel and Lucasfilm working together so closely, this felt like a proper sequel, moving the characters along, moving the story along, taking us from A New Hope to Empire Strikes Back. And that's been the last 5 years. And there's been tons of amazing books in that time period.
Yeah, hey, remember when we talked about Star Wars Dr. Aphra?
I do.
This is her moment.
Yeah.
Let's talk about her.
Right.
Everybody loves her, but where'd she come from? She was created in 2015 by writer Kieran Gillen with art by Salvador LaRocca. She's a morally gray rogue archaeologist, kind of like this other character Harrison Ford plays, but different.
she's much more like chaotic,
she's
neutral than
with a
than
dash
Indiana
of
Jones.
Occasional evil.
Yeah, with a definitely with a dash of occasional evil, but makes for great stories. She's so cool. She first appeared, as you mentioned, in Darth Vader number 3, the first Darth Vader series that we published. We've done a couple now, but man, she gets involved in the story and she's like working for Vader, and then sort of like goes down her own path, and immediately fans are like, this character is incredible. They like latch onto her. She gets to like go on these archaeological adventures and really cool stuff and has her own story.
Yeah, that was what was so crazy about this is this sort of side character in Darth Vader became the subject of her own solo series, which was the first character not from the movies to get their own solo series in canon in Marvel Comics.
Yeah. In this time period, we get Aphra, we get new stories with Poe Dameron, who has a great series. We get the story of C-3PO and his limb. That story told. Like, there's been really fun stuff.
Leia, Lando, both got their own little solo series that were fabulous and fun. And we've just wrapped up that long-running Star Wars story with issue 75 just recently in the last week or two.
Yeah, so we did 5 years of stories, and that is kind of the time period between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. So starting very soon, 2020, whole new set of Star Wars books that take place after Empire Strikes Back. So we have a new Star Wars book coming in 2020 that's written by Charles Soule, art by Jesus Saiz. That is going to be the main title. Then you're going to have a new Dr. Aphra series, which is written by Alyssa Wong with art by Marika Cresta. That one's going to be really cool. Alyssa Wong has been doing a lot more work for us lately. It's very, very exciting. And then there's a new Darth Vader series, which is written by Greg Pak with art by Rafael Ayanko. And that is coming in February. And that one is going to focus on some moments right after Empire Strikes Back and how Vader is dealing with being like, I'm your daddy. And then Luke is like, no, you're not. That is how it goes, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much line for line how that scene went.
And so this Vader series will touch on that stuff. It's going to be very cool. And of course, I'm sure we're going to do tons more Star Wars books.
But wait, we got to talk about one cool dude with a great accent.
Aw, he's my fave, Will Sliney.
Yeah.
Will Sliney is an amazing artist. He's done a ton of books, Spider-Man books and many, many others, but he's done a bunch of Star Wars comics as well. He did the comic adaptation for Galaxy's Edge.
Galaxy's Edge, of course, is the new area at Disneyland as well as Disney's Hollywood Studios in Orlando. It's awesome.
Yeah. And it's this sort of this planet Batu that has a bunch of history. So in the comic, they actually touch on a bunch of different time periods. Aphra shows up, but it also has stuff with Kylo Ren and the characters nowadays.
Also, like, shout out to both Disney and Star Wars show, because I learned a little bit about how they created the ambiance for Galaxy's Edge. And they fully wrote out that language and they pipe it in and they have people speaking in it. So you feel like you're fully immersed in a world where you don't speak the language and aliens are talking.
Yeah.
It's dope.
It's really, really cool. You'll find out about like Will's process for the Galaxy's Edge book, which is so cool. I think this is a really fun interview. But he's also got another new Star Wars book, which is Star Wars: The Rise of Kylo Ren, which is written by Charles Soule. And the tagline is so simple. It's from Ben to Ren.
Ooh, I love a rags to riches story.
That's not how it goes. It's much darker.
Ben to Ren.
Yep. Okay, fine. It's a 4-issue series, and the first issue is out next week. Very exciting. Hi, Will.
Hey.
How you doing?
I am amazing. I am just back on Earth after being in Batuu. So, wow.
I also recently traveled to Batuu, but a less
dimension?
Advanced version of Batuu than you've been to. We're going to get into that later. I want to talk about Star Wars a little bit later in the interview. But first things first, what was your origin story as a Marvel fan? Like, how'd you first get into our characters and everything?
Yeah, so it wasn't straightforward getting a hold of the comic books in Ireland, only because I didn't know where the comic book stores were as a kid. But what we did have were a lot of the European reprints and stuff that were sold inside in the shops. And they were great. They kind of collect kind of the ongoing story, maybe about a year or so late, and then a lot of the classics were reprinted in the back. So I used to, like, any break at lunchtime, everyone else would run down and they'd buy like their bottle of milk and crisps or whatever it is, but I'd sneak in and buy like a copy of whatever. It was every month, like either Spider-Man or X-Men. They were kind of bulked into that. It was both that and of course those 90s animated shows. I absolutely adored the Spider-Man one and the X-Men one. Like I still sing the theme songs in my head all of the time. So they're responsible for all this, I guess. And then to carry it on, one day, it was as late as when I was inside in college, I saw a guy in my class holding an American format comic book, which of course I knew what it was because I was, you know, trying to get a hold of them by post and stuff like that. I was trying to collect Ultimate Spider-Man over the mail, things like that. But a comic book store just opened up in Cork and I just ran into it like the happiest kid in Christmas. So it was amazing.
And they had lots of American comics.
They had absolutely everything. Yeah. So bye-bye, pocket money, hello, comic book collecting.
I mean, now though, I would think we release regularly day and date in the UK.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it even would have been back then. But yeah. I think actually the first way I was consuming them as close to the day they were released was Ultimate Spider-Man was released digitally back in the day, panel by panel on Marvel.com. So I subscribed to it. We won't talk about how late that some of those came into my home or whatever it was back then. I'm sure it's different now. But then when that comic book store opened, I was able to get my hand on absolutely everything. And anything that I'd missed, I was collecting in trade. And anything I wanted to follow, that was in my pull list. And it's still that way today.
Yeah. How'd you get started as a pro drawing comics?
It was a long road. I, again, didn't know what I was doing or how to do it. There was nobody around me in the county where I was from that was doing it. So literally when I finished college, I Googled comics, how to break into comics, and San Diego Comic-Con came up. So I basically took out a loan, brought over my first ever portfolio, and flew halfway around the world to get told I wasn't good enough. So
how old were you?
I would have been 20 or 21, I would say. But then, like, it was amazing. Around that same time, I got to meet a great bunch of other Irish illustrators like Declan Shalvey, Stephen Mooney, now who's doing the Black Widow series. And we all kind of banded together. Nick Roach was there as well, actually. And we all banded together and created our own little blog where we'd produce art and kind of push each other. And that was my first time I was able to converse about how to draw comics with other people. And, you know, the way you learn off of each other. And that was the first step on, I guess, a long road. And to get to Marvel, then it was CB who plucked me from obscurity in Dublin, believe it or not. So after years of trying coming over to New York, he found me in Dublin at a comic book convention. And it was an amazing experience. I'll never forget it. He'd been looking at my stuff for quite a while. And I always loved being able to show him my work because, you know, you knew he remembered what you did before and he knew he would see the effort that you were putting in. And he basically told me I was ready and he might have a job for me. So I was due to go to another convention the following, like literally 2 days after, or the next day even. And he asked me to do a sample page for the upcoming book. So it was my first ever all-nighter. The characters were Valkyrie and Misty Knight, who was from Fearless Defenders, mm-hmm. which I ended up getting, spoiler. But by the end of those 12 hours, like overnight, I felt like they were talking to me. I just had to send it in because I had to travel on a train up to Belfast for a convention. And when I crossed the border from the Republic of Ireland to Northern Ireland, I lost internet access on my phone. So I wasn't able to get anything. Got into the hotel, the internet wasn't working, got them to like install a new wire, plugged in my laptop, and boom, there was the email from Marvel. And I just danced around my hotel room for about half an hour and fell asleep then.
That's amazing.
So that definitely is a unique story, I reckon. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Was Fearless Defenders your first project?
It was. And what an amazing first project to get because it was an ongoing series. It was brilliant. There was a great team behind it and Colin Bunn was writing it. And it was just so much fun because every issue seemed different, you know, pushing me artistically because they were all in different kind of locations. Funnily enough, the first 5 pages were set on a fishing boat, which is ironic because I come from a little fishing village. And then we went to Asgard and this went crazy from there on in. And it was a brilliant starting experience. And yeah, kept on going from there.
That's super fun. Did you get to design any costumes for that? I know there were a bunch of looks.
Yeah, even some characters.
Some characters, yeah.
So Annabelle Riggs, who's now, you'll see her in Asgardians of the Galaxy, we got to create her. And that's, like, she'll always be one of my absolute favorite characters because she was in the first issue. We got to create her. People instantly fell in love with her. And we knew how important she was going to be. But the fans, you know, were only hoping. And then it was just an amazing, my first ever New York Comic Con after drawing Fearless Defenders, the amount of people that came up dressed as Annabelle were amazing. And there was a lot of like Valkyrie cosplayers at the same time as well. And we knew they were going to be the same person, but they didn't know. And they're all hanging out together. And it just would have been amazing to tell them. But it was a beautiful experience. And I love being able to create a character when you can watch them grow and see them in the new series now. And we created Rain as well. She's also in Asgardians as well. And yeah, got to do a good few bits like that.
Yeah. I love her power, like the look.
Yeah, dancer. Where all of the ribbon type flow things around her. Yeah. It gives you so much power as an artist to show so much momentum. So yeah, it's great.
It's a lot of fun. Mm. I remember we were talking, it might have been like Chicago this year, sometime recently, and you were telling me about how when you're back home in Ireland, you're well known in the country in a lot of places. Is part of that because I think you do a lot of art for the football clubs, right?
Yeah,
you have.
Well, yeah, I have. That's got me known around the UK a lot more as well. I started doing a lot of work for Everton Football Club, who were my favorite team, which was amazing. Because basically, this is when I was working on Spider-Man. Everton found out there was a Spider-Man artist that found Everton, and I'm literally a 30-minute flight away. So they've been amazing. The two things I wanted to do when I was really young, I wanted to be Spider-Man or play for Everton. So I got to draw them, which is close enough. There's been similar kind of moments for me. Like, I'm sure we'll talk about going to Galaxy's Edge later. Like, that was an amazing moment that came from comics. But also drawing for Everton, I got to play in Goodison Park, which was an amazing thing as well. And now I get to do stuff for all the Premier League clubs. But Ireland is like what I love about Ireland is it's such a supportive place. I put on a Comic-Con there once every few years, and it's very different in a lot of ways from the ones in the States, because a lot of the people that come literally just come up and they go, geez, fair play to you. It's great to see someone from Ireland doing this. And they'll shake your hand and they'll go away. And that's all they wanted to say. It's so to have people from Ireland, which we've come in force over the last 10 or so years, I feel is encouraging a lot of younger kids to stay drawing, whereas before they mightn't have known that they get to do something like that. So I think that's why me and a couple of the other guys get to be so well known there, and very happy to be in that position.
Yeah. I also remember you were telling me a really great story about how, yeah, you're known in Ireland and everything, but when you go back home, it is just like you get to... You don't get any of that, like, oh, it's that guy. It's you just get to be kicked around and enjoy life.
Oh, if you ever had an ego in the little village of Ballycotton, you'd be thrown out within 2 minutes, which is amazing.
It's
about
good.
The place.
Yeah. It's nice to have that.
Like on the front cover of the national newspaper, like there was literally a giant picture of Spider-Man 2099 that everyone in the country was reading, and it was on the bar inside in the pub that's across from the road from me. And I walked in, didn't know it was coming out. It was going to be on the front page, and I literally just walked in for a coffee, and all of the people I know were sitting around the paper, and not one of them mentioned it. And I absolutely love that, like, yeah. You know, because they're more interested in knowing how's your day, how's your wife, how's your son, and stuff like that. And Ballycotton's its own special magical place.
Yeah. When you talk about it, I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, just nice and calm and chill.
Very calm, very chill out.
Spider-Man, of course. You've done a lot of work on Spider-Man stories. Mm. Who's your favorite to draw?
So nostalgically, it's Peter Parker, mainly because of those animated series, but definitely now it's Spider-Man 2099, because we got to do such an amazing long run. All with Peter David.
Like 40 issues or something?
More,
like that?
Even.
More than that?
Yeah, we were close to 50. Wow. And that was coming off doing a couple of issues in Superior Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, and then we jumped from 2099 to Scarlet Spider-Man. So basically got to do so many of them, and especially when we were around the time when Spider-Verse was kicking off inside there as well. So I don't think there's a spider person that I haven't gotten to draw, unless they've been created since those days, which I suppose only a year ago. But I will be forever thankful that I got to do that for so long. Like, I always loved that character. People used to ask me, like, you know, would you like to switch to something else back at that time? And I was like, I could draw Spider-Man for the rest of my life. If anyone asked me, do I like the Spider-Man movie? Like, I'd watch him run around the field for 50 minutes and be happy, you know? So, like, it's just when... I think it was Dan Slott said it, like, there's a magic age of around 12 or 13 that if you love a character, then you can love them forever. And he is the quintessential character from that age that I absolutely loved. The dream was always to get to draw him, and to do it for so long was amazing.
What about Spidey villains? Who's your favorite Spidey villain?
Well,
not even just to draw, just to, like,
yeah,
you know, as a fan.
As a fan, it's just Norman Osborn, because of everything around him and his son breaks it down to it could be just you, your best friend, and the guy that runs the company. And it brings it down to, like, the close kind of family kind of things. And I think that's the key to all of the Spider-Man villains and the whole Spider-Man stories. It's half of it is your story that you could have. And then the other half, when he puts on the mask, that's the fantasy and the dream. And the same with the villains. The more they connect with him as Peter Parker, even if they don't know who he is, the better the villain is for me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of discussion. Like, the best Spider-Man stories are Peter Parker stories. Mm. Like, they have to sort of be the same. Mm. When you get that, when they gel together, that's when, you know, like, you really connect with it when you're talking about the classic Spidey.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you worked a lot with Peter David, which has got to be so much fun. As you know, like...
Yeah, like, I remember back in the day reading Wizard magazines, and he was up top of the charts of the writers. And again, another dream come true, and getting to know him and his family, and, you know, any convention that I would be at, they'd put us together. So it was always a joy getting to be beside him. And just to do it again for, like, it was with him in both Spider-Man 2099 and Scarlet Spider. So it felt very strange moving from, equally felt strange moving away from Spider-Man, but equally felt strange moving away from Peter, because I got to work for so long. And I'm sure it won't be the last time. I'm sure it'll happen again. But I'm blessed to be able to do that.
Yeah, he's going to have to get into the Star Wars side of things, because that's where you're living right now.
Yeah, I know. I've been plucked up from Spidey to Star Wars.
Which is, I mean, that's got to be fun for you. Were you a big Star Wars kid?
Yeah, I never thought those worlds would kind of cross over, but yeah, absolutely. I was telling this story last week while I was over at Galaxy's Edge that...
It was this week.
This week. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, time's crazy,
traveling.
Right?
Yeah, I went to space, you know. So so my mom, the only way you could rent a video, for those of you who don't know, a video is a method of transferring media onto your television screen. there's 400 people in the village where I'm from, right? So once a week, a van would come in, and that was basically our mobile video store. And my mom went up to the video store to rent us a movie, and we'd never know what it was going to be. And she came back with Empire Strikes Back. But I remember crying because I was like, Mom, I've already seen Star Wars, you know, like not knowing that there was a sequel. So when she put it in and I watched Empire Strikes Back, and I can specifically remember that moment where Star Wars went from one movie to a never-ending story. Just boom, like that. And I think that was a huge influence on me understanding that, like, there's more to a story than just the small bit of media that you might see. So that's why then, like, when I was playing a video game, I would like take back a pencil and notepad and start designing new characters for the video game. If I went to watch a movie, you know, I'd learn to play in that world a little more. And the same, of course, with Spider-Man and stuff like that. But I think that moment in Star Wars, I can actually remember the feeling when she came into the room with the VHS and then putting it on and realizing within, you know, 30 seconds, I guess after the crawl, this is a different movie. And little did I know from what I've learned this week, seeing what they have, the plans of what's going on in just Galaxy's Edge alone, that story is just growing and growing and growing. And to be a part of that again is amazing.
Yeah. Your first Star Wars gig was what, the Dr. Aphra annual? Or was it something else?
Well, yeah. So I did a couple of pages with Dr. Aphra while I was in Spider-Man. Just jumped in to get a little taster of the universe.
Yeah.
I went from there then to do a part of the Beckett story, which was amazing. And I think that's when the guys inside the Star Wars office kind of made a decision to, let's steal him from Spider-Man and bring him over here. And it's funny timing for me because just literally when I finished my last issue of Scarlet Spider, my son was born. And the very next day I was moving on to Solo and to Star Wars. So I always will know exactly how long I've been working on Star Wars. So because of that.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. Nice.
I can see why they would want you in Star Wars. Just as someone who reads every single thing we put out, I am always very much aware when you're doing a book because you don't skimp on anything. Like your world building is so strong, and your backgrounds, your layouts, everything. You get a sense of where a character is. Of course, your figures are so dynamic, but I see how much you put into where everything is set, and that's so important to a Star Wars comic. It's like it's so unique looking.
Yeah, like I think you have a responsibility when you're working on Star Wars because there's such amazing concept art and such amazing design in everything that's been there, even down to like the perfect example of that when is when you walk into, let's say, Doc Ondar's shop in Batuu in Galaxy's Edge, which I had to draw loads of times. There's elements from every Star Wars movie in his collection, and every element of that has an artist behind it that designed it, and they're the top artists, you know, in the game at doing this kind of stuff. So whether it's down to just like a buckle on the side of a helmet, or like this giant building that's in the background, you know, that it's brilliant to be able to pull from all those designs and to use them. But it's important to do them right, to do them justice for those that designed them as well.
Yeah. And you were working on the Solo stuff with Nightmare of a Human, Robbie Thompson.
The most evil person I've ever met.
Yeah. No, we love Robbie. He's like a blessing to us all.
Yeah.
How was it working on a film adaptation?
It was great. Like I said, it was an amazing time because my son was just born. I'd seen the movie before I started, because that was the way that it worked. But it was still in theaters when I got the gig. So I went in. I couldn't really bring a notebook in to watch it like that and jot down everything that I would need to draw, but I was just trying to absorb everything that I could, you know, not knowing what the process would have been in terms of like what I would be supplied by Lucasfilm, what would come to me. And of course, everything was you have a responsibility to make it like the movie, but you have a responsibility to bring your own kind of style into it as well. You get to tell things from different perspectives. One thing that was amazing to me and Robbie about that movie is you only realize how much is in that movie when you turn it into a comic book, because you know, we were getting through the issues, and you start to realize, like, you know, you need a whole issue for the Kessel Run. You know, there's so much story in that movie, and again, so many settings, so many characters. I love even seeing the concept art that's even being released afterwards, and it's always a challenge to try and get it as close as you can from all the reference and stuff as well. But it was cool.
Yeah. And you mentioned already the Galaxy's Edge series. How'd you get that gig?
Well, hopefully, I would guess from what you were saying, if I'm able to put a lot into the background, and no comic, I think, in the history of mankind has ever needed something like that. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any comic book artist has ever drawn a comic of a place that didn't exist, yet they were going to visit that place in the future, if that makes sense.
I think that's a new experience that can only be through Star Wars or even, you know, Marvel, because we announced the Avengers Campus. So
yeah,
I don't
go.
Know if there's something that in time will have that same similar experience. Yeah. But, you know, with the shop in particular, you know, I walk through it in Anaheim. You walk through it now in Orlando. You could spend hours in there.
Oh, they had to drag me out of there. And I have seen it so many times from through the concept art, to the pictures as it was being built, and obviously from drawing it and, you know, the background of every panel that's set inside there. When I first set foot in it, so I obviously had this most amazing, you know, feeling, wow, I'm in Star Wars, to immediate dread going, oh my God, I'm going to be able to see what I got wrong. And like, I could literally take a red pen so many people that weekend have already told me how they've walked around with the comic and been holding up the panels and looking to see if what's right. And so far, everything seems right. I'm sure there are mistakes in there.
Here's what I would say to them. If there's a quote unquote mistake, it's a shop. Stuff comes and goes. Stuff gets moved around.
Very true.
You know, he if he has repeat customers, he wants them to feel like they're coming into something that's changing.
But it's not just the shop. It's the whole land. Like we have the milk stand in there.
Of course.
We have a fight in the toy store. The very first shot is, that's the first thing I did. I ran to where the first panel was. I was kind of holding my breath, nervous, and I was like, okay, it all lines up that way. Because it's impossible when you don't have the physical place to walk into to know exactly how it's all going to line up. And I went to crazy efforts to try and get this right. So I built a 3D model of Batuu, which you can imagine takes a long, long, long time. I was halfway through Docking Bay 7 after doing Ronto Roasters and Doc Ondar's Den when I was like, oh my God, I have so much more to do here and I need to start drawing these pages. And of course, Ethan Sachs, the writer, was joking with me about this all weekend, where he was like, let's give the readers what they want. Page 2 and 3, big flyby overhead shot of the whole land of Galaxy's Edge. And my head was like, okay, I need every single building and where they are straight away in this. But that 3D model proved to be massively helpful, because I was able to take my camera down and to see exactly what the relationship was in between the buildings and how they kind of came together. And of course, there are little tiny differences, but I challenge you to find them. You know, I'll give you a no prize.
You know someone who's going to hear this go, okay,
here
I go.
Oh, definitely.
Let me do it.
Yeah.
That was such an experience. So amazing. And you went for the big opening for the Orlando period. And that had Rise of the Resistance already?
It had a preview of a part of it. And we didn't know we were going to get to go on it. So the first day was pretty much Ethan and I walking around Galaxy's Edge by ourselves. Like, I'm not kidding you, just running around the land like little kids. Like, I ran around the deck of the Falcon. And this is what's amazing about the Millennium Falcon in Galaxy's Edge, which I didn't even know. I ran around it for about an hour. I'm not kidding. Just running around, just pretending I was Han Solo, like a little kid. And I did not find I won't spoil it for people, but there's a certain part of the Millennium Falcon with a certain creature in there that's huge, and I didn't find it inside there. So yeah, look, I can see your face. You're even trying to think what it is now. I'll tell you off air, but it's huge. There's just winding corridors all the ways around that thing.
Because I got to go into the attraction in Anaheim, and it went by so fast for me, because I was in the, like, it was, they were just running people through it.
Yeah,
you know, we had 30 seconds. I got my picture at the game board and everything. Yeah. But like, when I walked in there, even though there were people everywhere, I started to tear up.
Oh my God.
Because it's such a beautiful recreation of something that we have experienced for most of our lives now through these films and now the comics and everything.
Yeah, I will say that I thought it would be walking through those hallways or seeing that that the area where they sit down and where you can even see like Luke's helmet from when he's training. But when you walk into the cockpit, it's into that dark little room, which is the way it's supposed to be. Like, even like the ride is amazing, but just that one moment when you walk into the cockpit is just incredible.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
so good. Anything else fun from the from your trip to Batuu?
Well, Rise of the Resistance, tiny bit that I can talk about, just takes everything to a whole another level. So we didn't know what we were going to get to see there, and we were surprised at it. All of the press that were there as well were surprised to get to see it. It's going to be bigger and more complex than any ride at any of the Disneyland, Disney World, anything like that. It matches multiple different types of experiences in there. It's really, really long, but just the moment that we saw, absolutely without spoiling it, just it both really scared me, really thrilled me, and it's something that I was not expecting. And it just shows you the massive, massive, massive scale of the piece. And it's not like you're just sitting down in this. You're interacting and walking around and being taken through in this experience. And everyone will need to see this, have this moment inside there.
Damn it. I can't wait. I was so happy to finally get to experience part of it recently. I'm going to have to find a way to get in there.
This is going to take it to the whole next level. And then the future plans that they have... It's just
listeners like, can't see your face, but your eyes just got maniacal and like, so excited.
Oh my god, yeah. Some of it's out. I'm not sure what it is. I don't want to say anything, but like there's the Falcon, but Rise of Resistance ticked up another level, and what they'll have following that. Yeah,
man, very exciting. What's also exciting is you're still going to be doing some cool Star Wars stuff in the future.
Yes, I got arrested on Batuu because I was trying to announce it before, and two stormtroopers came and just dragged me along. I've gone to the dark side.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I'm on the journey to the dark side, shall we say. So I'm allowed to talk about this now?
Yes.
So I think, in my opinion, be very careful about saying that, I think this is going to be one of the most important Star Wars books ever. It's Charles Soule is writing it. It's Kylo Ren. It's the rise of Kylo Ren, and it's going to tell the story from Ben to Ren. How Ben Solo joined the dark side. How he encounters the Knights of Ren. It's all of those amazing bits that you know I've been dying to find out about from watching the movies. And it's an incredible responsibility and opportunity to be able to tell this in comic books and tell our story that way. It's going to really add to your experience of watching the movies and in terms of like synergy between what JJ is doing and what we're doing here. Like it's all run through the same channels, all the same people. And Charles is obviously massively excited about it. I've known Charles for a long, long time and we've been dying to work together with each other for a long time. So this is great. Before we both broke into the industry, we knew each other. So to get to tell a story of this scale is just... It's daunting, but brilliant, and I can't wait for it to come out.
When did you learn that you were getting this job? San Diego?
I'm totally blanking. San Diego. I was like, what's that?
The little show in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, because I remember Charles had sort of like teased something about it.
Yes. So Mark and Tom, our editors inside in Star Wars, basically asked me, you know, how do I feel about working on a Kylo Ren series? And I was like, of course, this is amazing. I just got to draw him in Galaxy's Edge, and he's obviously, you know, a big part of that story of the overall land. But as soon as I draw him, I really wanted to draw more. So, you know, I assumed it was going to be, you know, a Kylo Ren story when he was Kylo Ren. I assumed it might have been, you know, tied into Galaxy's Edge and what he's doing around there at that time in between the movies. And then I saw the announcement at San Diego. So I literally had to email them and go, is this the book that I'm doing? And they're like, yes. And I was like, wait, with Charles and everything? And they're like, yes. So I messaged Charles straight away and he's like, yeah, yeah, this is it. And he's like, I was like, this is going to be big. And he's like, yeah, yeah, this is going to be huge. What's great about it, I've never had so much time as I've had to prep for a book that I've had for this. And I'm getting to be that person now to get to design the concepts of these amazing places in Star Wars that are really going to add to the story. Everything does, but like this is such an important part of his story and the people around him, without spoiling it. But you can guess who's around him at that time when he's Ben Solo. It's an amazing experience. I still can't believe that I'm doing it. I won't. It's like I have a director friend who tells me you can't take anything as for certain until you put your recording, the audio commentary on the DVD. So I'm just like, I will not fully believe that I'm part of this huge story until the day I'm holding that comic book in my hand.
I can't think of anyone more worthy of being able to make Star Wars and Spider-Man canon throughout their career. Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Big thanks to Irish superstar Will Sliney.
I was going to call him a national treasure.
He is. He is everything. And he was wonderful. Thank you for being on the show, Mr. Will. But we've got to move on with our community segment. Last week, we asked for your favorite Star Wars comics moments, which we'll get to in a second. But what is our question for next week's show?
Who is your Star Wars OTP? That is your one true pairing in the galaxy far, far away. And I want to expand this so that it includes buddies, because okay. I am stanning Han Solo and Chewbacca always, right? Like, what good buds? Just living alone, traveling through space, just being snuggle buds, right?
Yeah.
OTP.
All right.
And of course, you can send those to us and use the hashtag on social media, This Week in Marvel, or you can email them to us at twimpodcast@marvel.com, or you can just send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/This Week in Marvel.
Yeah. Last week, I had trouble trying to pick my favorite Star Wars comic, and I think I'm just going to say broadly the two Darth Vader series that we've done. We have the first Darth Vader series, which was by Kieran and Salva, and then the second one, which was by Charles Soule and Giuseppe Camuncoli. Both have different tactics about the story that they're telling with Vader, but both are incredible.
See, mine would be, and I brought them up in the piece, because Princess Leia and Lando are just two characters I want more of all the time,
yeah.
And getting those solo series was chef's kiss.
Indeed. But now we got to hear from you listeners. First up is the Tech Lord at Lex Pendragon, who says, the best Star Wars comic is tough because I have loved all of it. But Dr. Aphra, who seems to have come out of nowhere, has been a surprisingly great character and story. Her early interactions with Vader was inspired both for her and for Vader.
Tony at T. Bizzleworth said, I've been watching The Mandalorian, so I decided to try out some Star Wars comics. I'm 13 issues into Dr. Aphra, and I'm really enjoying it. I like how shady she is, but the two murder droids that she's with are the best.
Yeah, we did not talk about her murder droid frenemies.
No, yeah.
000 and BT-1 are wonderful. They are the evil version of R2-D2 and C-3PO in all the best ways.
Next up is an email from our audio development manager, Brad Barton, just our coworker, friend, and just great guy with nice hair.
Double B.
Anyways, he said, and this is so Brad, ooh, me too. Me too. Star Wars was my gateway drug to all comicdom. Love these in particular. Original series, Star Wars number 39, in which Luke and Leia teach a sentient spacecraft how to care again, with amazing art by Michael Golden.
Michael Golden, so good.
And then in the newer content column, Charles Soule's Lando miniseries, which is fun, creepy, and gives Lando's sidekick pal Lobot an incredible story arc. Run, do not walk to this series. Happy Life Day, Brad Barton, Star Wars nerd.
So much to unpack from here, but also Lobot, so great
I
in this
Lobot.
Series. But yes, those are also great suggestions. One other thing that I wanted to point out, there's a Star Wars series, I've talked about it on the show before, written by Alan Moore. So we have those on Marvel Unlimited, and they're super weird, like super, like just freaky cool UK 80s comics.
And a lot of those Dark Horse comics are now on Marvel Unlimited as well.
So many of them. Yeah, it's really great.
From Dino Chapman in Bellingham, Washington, said, hi, Ryan.
Hi, Dino.
Love the pull list in This Week in Marvel. Reason for the email. I read Excalibur number 3, and Teeny Howard has made Jubilee the mother of dragons. So we need to call her Jubilisi.
I love it. I love it.
It's so good.
Oh, my God. I'm going to send this to Teeny as well. And then one more. We got to give a super thanks to Kevin Irizarry at Kevin Comics for his lovely tweet. He says, every Monday morning I listen to This Week in Marvel. It's part of my routine. From Lorraine Sink with her human-human woman sinkways to Agent M's dad jokes to a beautiful breakdown of Marvel history, they make my morning every week.
This episode of This Week in Marvel was produced by Persia Verlin and Zachary Goldberg. Our audio development manager is Brad Barton. He sent us an email.
Jill Dubov is our director of audio.
And additional production help was from Jamie Frevely and Emily Kimura.
And I also want to say a big thanks to our friends at SiriusXM for letting us record here. They are the best!
And a special thanks to our sponsor, Droids R Us. Are you a fan of droids? We are too. Trust us, we've got the droids you are looking for.
I love it. Lorraine is losing it, which means the show is over. I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorraine.
This is Marvel.
Your universe.